Okay, So now we spoke last week about the different aspects of Ashgacha that Hashem could be Mashgiach in this world. And there is what is called Ashgacha Kalalis, an overall divine providence over this world, where he doesn't really look at every single detail of our lives. Rather, it's more a general, big picture kind of Ashgacha, where we find that animals are being judged on Rosh Hashanah, right? Every single creature is being judged on Rosh Hashanah, right? Not only Jews, but Jews, non-Jews, animals.
The whole world.
Right? Yeah, the whole world. Every single creature, every single living thing,
I don't understand how they judge an animal. An animal has no...
You're right. It's a good question.
Can't do anything but what he was created for.
Right. Obviously, an animal does not have free will. It's not like, you know, a cat can decide, you know, should I jump into this garbage can, into that garbage can? Should I eat this mouse or that mouse? What's being judged is not necessarily the choices the animal made, because obviously the animal is not judged for its choices. Rather, what's being judged is what is this animal bringing forth the Hashem's presence in this world or not. So you're right, really it's not up to the animal. It's not up to the animal. But for example, if this animal is serving, you know, a tzaddik, for example, then this animal will be judged favorably.
The animal can only do what he does because he was made that way.
You're right.
How could it be any different?
Well, again, it's being judged. You're right. It doesn't have a choice necessarily.
Is he going to have enough food? I don't know. That's,
yeah, I'm saying, is he going to live or die this
that
year?
Way. Is he going to starve to death? Is he going to, you know, be able to find food? Is he going to be able to find water?
Yeah.
Not individual animals, is it the group as a whole gets hashgacha kalalit?
Right, right, exactly. Right. Yeah, it's not like every single detail, you know, like, you know, how much water is he going to have, how much food is he going to have, you know. It's not very every single detail in its life, but the more general picture. That's what's being judged. Again, based on, is this animal bringing forth Hashem's presence in this world or not? You're right, it's not up to the animal, but that's the way the judgment goes.
Well, I mean, the same thing is all the animals didn't do what they were told to when they created different animals, like the mule.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crossbreed that shouldn't have been.
Right.
So maybe that's what it is. I mean, you're saying it's judging.
Right.
It's judging. The animal, when a man crossbreeded them, he made them, even though for themselves they wouldn't have done that, I don't think. Would they?
Why not?
Necessarily.
Because they can only do what they were created to do. They have no choice what they want to do.
Sure they do. If you get a German Shepherd and you get a collie, and one dog sees the other dog, they're different. You know, they're dogs, but they're different breeds. They mix.
I just said that. That's what I said before. That some of them. Some of them, just dogs. I mean, how did the mixed breeds become? Because people bred them that way. They didn't
right.
do it by themselves.
Right.
I don't
exactly.
think.
Yeah, you're right. That's the choice of people. That's the choice of men. Animals don't have a free will on that level, right?
But this is judges. The same words for people in any probably little different aspect. You believe it judgment is a completely different way to judge people.
Yeah, for sure.
Animal was created by Hashem. He knows what how he wants created him. We want to judge him. How maybe we never know. Maybe once he decided to remove all calls. Who knows?
You're right, we don't know. We don't necessarily know. But as much as the creature, the person, is aware of Hashem's presence in this world, and is more has more of a closer relationship, so to speak, with Hashem, that's how intimately they're going to be judged. Right? Obviously, the dog and the cat that don't have no awareness of Hashem, they don't even have any knowledge of, you know, any existence of a higher power. Obviously, they're not going to be judged on a very, very close and specific level. Whereas human beings who have more of an understanding, they'll be judged on a higher level. And Jews who are even, you know, they're aware of the presence of Hashem, they believe in Hashem, they're going to be judged on a higher level, right? And more and more details are going to be decided for them during that year, right? It goes in exact correlation to Hashem, to the person or that creature's awareness of Hashem in this world.
But there is one case when really directly Hashem judged the snake.
Well, yes, that's true, but it's brought down the snake. It was a bit more, it wasn't just an animal.
No, but
the snake was a bit of a higher creature than just, you know, the snake that we're aware of today.
That's not the snake we know right now. But at least what he said, it's very similar to what the snake is now.
Yes. Well, I'm saying the serpent was reduced to its form today because of that sin.
No, but the serpent at that time is not the same. But it looks as if he judged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That is true. Because, again, the snake was obviously aware of the fact that he can go ahead and seduce Chava to go ahead and eat from the tree of Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge. Right? Whereas a regular animal does not have that ability, does not have that knowledge to go ahead and, you know, seduce people or get people to do things. Right? So again, it's all in direct correlation to the person's
that
knowledge.
You brought, when one dog mates with another dog, he looks like they're the same beast. That isn't anything. That's not changing. We're talking about you're changing the animal altogether. And the thing that comes out afterwards, like the meal, they can't reproduce. They're a different thing altogether. That's why there's a lot to do there. You're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't. Dogs
have a sechel. Cats have a sechel. When you see, my daughter has a dog. When it sees another dog, doesn't even look like itself.
Right.
She has a pit bull, and it sees a collie. Starts barking. You know.
Yeah.
It knows it's not a cat.
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
It knows it's not a cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. So what's
right,
some of
let's go a little
here?
Further.
It's the same breed. A dog, you know, no matter what you want to call them, they're all dogs.
Right. Right.
Okay. Continue.
So let's see. So what does he say? He's saying that over here, he's davening that the Hashgacha of Hashem so he's davening that the Hashgacha of Hashem should be on a more individual and intimate level, not on that big picture level where Hashem is just, you know, deciding the big picture, the general life of the person. Rather, that my words, Shlomo Melech is davening, my words should be close to Hashem. Meaning, it shouldn't be a judgment just at the beginning of the year, just in Rosh Hashanah. Rather, it should be more of the kind of judgment that's being done every single day. Every single day, Hashem's judgment should take place, meaning that it should be that the Jewish people should be judged on a more intimate level. And the Hashgacha of Hashem will be much closer, and it'll be more intimately involved in their lives. That's what he's davening for over here. Mandas kolame arat ki Hashem elokim einoit. In order for the rest of the nations to realize that the Hashgacha of Hashem over the Jewish people is much closer and much more on an individual level compared to all the other going, to all the other nations, where it's just a big picture, you know, is this nation going to go to war? Are they going to starve? Are they going to have famine? Are they going to have plenty of food? Are they going to have rain? Right? It's more the big picture issues. That's what's being judged for the other nations. But it's so Hashem HaMelech is not now davening that the Hashgacha over the Jewish people should be clear and obvious to everyone that it's actually being done on an intimate level. That's what he's davening for over here. Right, that their heart should be whole. Meaning, not only that, but Hashem, but the Jewish people's heart should be close to Hashem, and it shouldn't be separate from Hashem.
I don't understand. Why do you keep saying the Jewish people like they're different than me and you? You're talking about a different person.
No, you're right. I'm talking about all the Jewish
people. No, he says it's so. It's not the Jewish people. It's us.
Us, yeah. You're right. Us.
It's us.
You're right.
You love talking about somebody different.
Right. Well, he's davening about that generation, but you're right. He's davening for all the future generations to come.
Right.
You're right. Good point. Right.
Where do you get all the oxen?
So let's see. Wait, we didn't get there yet.
22,000 oxen.
Yeah, he
had
a lot of oxen.
How long did it take the sheikh 22,000 oxen?
Well, he had more than one person doing it. He had a whole team, a sheikh team. So let's see, we'll get there. Right? So the king, Shlomo HaMelech, is now starting the party. The party is about to begin. And they have many, many oxen to shecht. How many oxen? 22,000. And 120,000 sheep.
Were these done in the base of Mikdash?
So that's a good question. Let's see.
Or is it outside? I mean, were they done as a sacrifice, or was it just done as part of the party?
Well, typically, all the karbanis that were being brought outside. So yeah, this was done as part of the party.
These are not karbanis like that. These were just to make it holiday.
Festive, yeah.
It wasn't.
Well, it says the Radak brings down that he brought three types of karbanos. He brought oila, mincha, and shlamim. Right, oila is completely burnt, Hashem. Nothing is being left to eat. Mm-hmm. Right, shlamim on the other hand, part of it is being burnt, but the other part is being eaten. So we see clearly that it was karbanos. But it was definitely enhancing the party because a lot of the meat was being eaten. So it was one big massive barbecue.
You have to think about how long does it take to shecht 20,000 oxen. You know, you got to shecht them, you got to bite it, the knife, and you got to.
You don't need you need a bite the knife.
You
don't
need. You got to do that.
You don't need to do the melicha. You don't have to salt them. You don't need to salt them because anything that's tliyesh, anything that's being burnt. For example, if you want to have a barbecue, if you want to shecht an animal and have a barbecue, there's no need for any melicha. No need. You could shecht it, check the lung, right, and quickly slap it on the grill, you're good to go.
It was an assembly line.
Yeah, it was an assembly line. Obviously, you had a whole team of people. It wasn't just like, you know, like one person doing everything. You had a whole team. And you just kept them coming. Just keep them coming.
I don't know if you can shecht all those animals at once because... You don't know if it's the related or something. You're not allowed to shecht, you know, all of them together.
The whole thing has to be a miracle.
Some kind of a din. You shouldn't shecht the mother
the
with
mother
its
and the spit. Yeah, right. Right.
And it could be. So you have to or the mother couldn't see.
Right, they can't do it the same day. You can't mother cause the mother and the child in the same day.
Yeah, think about it like Erev Pesach, after Shach the Korban Pesach.
Yeah.
You know how many people came there? The whole, everybody, thousands.
Right.
Hundreds. And it has to be done in 6 hours, some of the 12th to right before and everything else. That's got to be a miracle.
Yeah, listen, there were many miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there were 10 miracles that were done daily that did not exist in the second Beis HaMikdash, right? One of them was that there was no...
flies.
No flies, yes.
It said that the 12 oxen that Dovid HaMelech used for the to pull the Oren, they lived a long time, 400 years or something like
that.
Not 400 years, but they lived a long time, these oxen.
Really?
Till, you know.
Until they were shechted by Shlaimai.
You know.
Really? Interesting. Never heard that. Very interesting. What were you saying?
Where were the oxen kept before they did?
On the farm. Where do you think they?
Well, everyone brought their own.
This at the base of Midrash. It wasn't on the farm.
Well, everyone brought their own oxen to donate. They were obviously the Jewish people.
Okay,
they were very excited. You know, this is the inauguration.
You have a yard. You have whatever it is here. Mm-hmm. 120,000 people bring an ox. You have all these people.
No, these people didn't bring them. These are all owned by Shlomo HaMelech. Were all his.
Right.
It was all his own cattle.
Anyway.
All right. Next.
Okay, so let's see.
Big barbecue.
Right, there were three types of kavanas: oila, mincha, and shlamim. Kmizbach anachoshes asher lifnei Hashem katoin mehachil as oila v'samincha v'aschel v'ashlamim. Right. So the question is, which mizbach anachoshes are we referring to?
This was the.
So it cannot be referring to the one that Moshe. Had with the one that Moshe Rabbeinu made for the Mishkan, because that one
was only
it was small. But it's talking over here that says the Mizbech HaNachoshes was small, but it can't be the one of Moshe, because the one of Moshe was put in Gniza together with Oyel Moed. So it couldn't be that one. Now the Mizbech HaNachoshes that was made by Shlomo was the following dimensions. It was 100. It was It was 20 amma over 20 amma.
20 ammas is 30 feet.
Right, so it's not that big. Right, 30 feet on 30 feet is not big enough to hold, you know, 120,000 sheep and 22,000
oxen. He leaves it at that. Well, so how'd they do it? What'd they do with the stuff?
So you're saying they did not use Mizbech HaNachoshes. That was too small.
Yeah, so what did they do?
So
he's not telling you.
He tells you what to do. If you wait a second, you'll find out.
Then it says that Solomon observed the feast.
So there are doc here. So let's see.
He told they did all this here. They did all. If it was.
So there are doc. Let's just see a minute how big the Mizbech HaNachoshes of Moshe was. And the one of Shlomo HaMelech was. So Radak over here does a cheshbon like this. He says that the Mizbech HaNachoshes that was built by Moshe Rabbeinu was very small, very, very tiny. It was 5 amas over 5 amas, right? About 7 feet. 7 feet long, 7 feet wide. Yeah?
Yeah.
So how many could he do at a time? Not too many.
Right, so the
according to he had to wait to turn.
Right, well, the question is, how much can you bring it each time? Yeah? So the Radak does the following calculation. He says that even the Mizbeach and Achesheth, it was made by Shlomai, it was 20 over 20. So according to the amount of oilas and the amount of amos, the Radak does the calculation that this Mizbeach and Achesheth that was made by Shlomai, 20 over 20, could only hold 16,000 korbanos, which is daily, right? Which is not a lot. Right, because over here we see that he brought 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep.
So we're talking about this is the first time that we used the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
That nothing was done before this.
Right.
Anything he had to do, he was still using the...
Well, before that, everyone had their own private bamas. Before that, the halacha was, everyone was allowed to build their own bama, their own mizbeach, wherever their hometown was. They could build their own mizbeach, it's fine. Right? They didn't need a special mizbeach.
So they made the Mishkan, and they couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah, but the Mishkan was nignaz. It was put in Gniza, the Mishkan, and once they entered Eretz Yisrael. So after they entered Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't bring any more the karbonas on the mizbeach of the Mishkan. So what happened was, every person built his own mizbeach, his own bama in his hometown, wherever it was, and that's where he brought his karbonas. After the Beis HaMikdash was being built, after it was built, then they were not allowed to bring any more. They were not allowed to build.
I thought that was after they made the Mishkan. They couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, but they didn't have the Mishkan in Eretz Yisrael, right?
They didn't what?
They did not have the Mishkan once they entered Eretz Yisrael.
They didn't have it?
No, they didn't have the Mishkan.
What happened to it?
So it says the Mizbeach that was built by Moshe was being nignaz.
It was
put in Gniza. It was put away.
Oh, all right.
So they didn't have the Mizbeach and the Mishkan.
No. Oh, they, okay.
Right? And once they enter Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
Didn't we learn before that Shimshon Abgibbah's father, he made a sacrifice out in the field?
Right.
He made his own bima?
Yeah.
Bima?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I don't know where else it's mentioned, but that's one place it's mentioned.
Yeah. So the Radak says over here that since the Mizbeach and Achesheth that Shlomai built can only contain 16,000 oilos, so what he did was he was Mekadesh, he sanctified the floor of the Chatzar, the floor of the courtyard, and that's where he brought the Karbanis. Whatever couldn't fit on the Mizbeach, they were sacrificing on the floor, right?
Better question is, where'd they get all the wood? That's all. Who
the
brought
wood?
The wood?
Yeah, no, there's no shortage of wood. Really.
You say over here the oxen, the oxen, they're 480 years. The same oxen that
mentioned. That
they didn't,
David brought.
They didn't get old, and they didn't get any marks on them or anything.
Apparently not. That was one of the nisim.
That
yeah.
was the oxen from the desert. That's what it was.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yes, and that's what he did. So he's Mekadesh, that's what he says in this pasuk. That day he was Mekadesh, the inside of the courtyard. What's that referring to? It's referring to the floor. Because not everything could be brought on the Mizbeach itself. Right? The Mizbeach Nechosh was not big enough. Therefore, he brought everything that did not fit on the Mizbeach, he brought it on the floor. Yeah? Right, so he had a massive party, and right that day there were people coming all the way from
Egypt,
Nachal Mitzrayim, right, and they had 14 days of celebration. Yeah. The eighth day, he sent them away. V'yelchu le'olem esmichim v'toyu lev al kol toyu asher asa Hashem l'David avdoi l'Yisrael amoi. That day, he sent everyone home, and everyone home happy, and they were thanking Hashem for all the toyva that I gave them.
It says they went home. Everyone's wife was ready, and they had next year they had a baby. A baby boy.
Beautiful. There you go. That's part of the simcha.
How do you know it was a baby boy?
That's what it says.
Yeah. Right? And the Radak brings down over here that day a bas kol came out and said, Kulchem uzmanim l'chayo elam abba. You're all welcome to come to elam abba, to the world to come. That's what they were thinking. That's what they were thanking Hashem for. Right, and another shot is that they were thanking Hashem that He completed His promise that the descendant of David HaMelech would be the one to build the Beis HaMikdash, and now it finally came true. So they were now thanking Hashem for that. Yeah, and obviously part of that is the peace and quiet that came to the Jewish land, came to the Eretz Yisrael.
What does it mean, a bas kol? The coin,
a heavenly voice
came. I wasn't listening to the radio that day. No, did it come to the coin gadol that on the?
It's a good question. It depends on the level the person is. The higher the level the person is, the more you can hear
the
bas
time. Hear something.
Right, so it's unclear. It's unclear how, you know, if the people heard it directly from Hashem, so to speak, or they heard it through the Navi, through the Kohen. Again, it depends on the individual level of that person, of each person. If he was in the higher level, he would hear it himself. If not, then he would hear it from the Kohen or the Navi.
They hear it in a dream, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Vayter. Pasuk Tes. Perek Tes.
What is the party was 14 days, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Another 6 days they celebrate at home. The eighth day was called a regel b'fnei atzmai. It was Shmini Atzeres. So that was a separate yontif, separate chag, and everyone went home to celebrate that one.
But they, after that, they back to the temple?
No, they went back home.
They had to go back home.
But they have party.
This whole thing.
Wait, just a sec, what? What?
No, what? Whole party 14 days. After 8 days, they went home.
Yes.
But it means, they continue party at home 6 days?
No,
on the eighth day, yes, they continued at home.
That means another 6 days they continue back.
No, they didn't do another 7 days. Rather,
before.
Yeah, meaning there were 14 days, there were 7 and 7 that they did in the, meaning the, with two separate yontifs, right? The first seven was one yontif. Then, right.
And back again.
No. They did 7 and 7 in the Beis HaMikdash. Then on the eighth day, after the second 7, yeah,
they went
back home.
It's to teach you that they ate. It was such a party that they ate on Yom Kippur.
Yeah, right.
So it would take 14 days from the end of Shemini Atzeres. It was part of the yontif. Based on English, they were eating on Yom Kippur.
Yeah, they started before Rosh Hashanah, all this stuff. And then they decided they had to do this because there's no simcha unless you eat.
Right.
So they ate on Yom Kippur. Right. Then that they thought maybe they shouldn't have done that. But then the Bosphore came down.
So it was
you're right.
You're all okay. You're all good. What you did was okay.
Yes.
Now, would you just mention what I saw here about that he put it on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
He said he before he did that, he had to do something to the floor, like...
He had to be mekadesh the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be Mekadosh Lafor. You can't just, so you know, put a carbon anywhere, yeah. That's what it says in the Pasuk. But Yimu Kidash HaMelech Estecha Chater. Right, that day, he was Mekadosh Estecha Chater, the inner courtyard, referring to the floor of the courtyard. That's what he was Mekadosh. Because he had to bring the Korbanos over there. He didn't have, he did not have enough room on the Mizbeach itself.
So where's the fire?
The fire?
Well, you bring them to the floor.
Right, okay, so they had to have a fire, yeah.
Well, the floor was, I mean, I can't visualize it.
I think the floor was
stone.
Stone, yeah. It was a stone floor.
And then they put wood on
it. Yeah.
You put wood on the floor, you light the fire.
Yeah, and yeah. Yeah, not a problem. No problem. No.
The only problem is the floor is slippery from all the fats.
Right, right. I'm sure they had some kind of way to take care of that.
All right, whatever.
Okay. Let's see what after. Parak Tes. Ve'ikachal shleimah livnas beis Hashem beis HaMelech ve'skol cheshek shleimah shechofetz chofetz la'asais. Right? He finally finished building the beis Hashem and everything he desired, kol cheshek shleimah, referring to all the extra structures that he built, because there are two main structures that were needed. Beis Hashem, Beis HaMikdash, is essential, that's needed. Beis HaMelech, the palace, is also needed. But besides that, Shlomo HaMelech built other structures that were not necessarily needed, but that's what he desired, that's what he wanted, and that's why it calls it over here, Cheshek Shlomo, the desire of Shlomo, right? Asher Chofetz Lasis, that he wanted to build, right? He wanted to build and grow, right? Even though it wasn't essential, wasn't necessary, but that's what we wanted to do. So we're now celebrating all of those structures, the necessary ones, the Beis HaMikdash and the palace, and all the unnecessary ones, all the extra structures. V'yeira Hashem Shleim Hashenis Kasher Nira Elo B'Givoyin. So the Malbim over here explains that what do you mean the second time? This is really the third time, right? If you think about it, right? Because he had the first Nevuah, right, when he became king. And then he had the second time, right, when he started building the Beis HaMikdash. And this is the third time, when he finished. So why does it say the second time?
Yeah.
Right, Shenis. So Malbim explains that the Nevuah that came to Shlomo HaMelech in the beginning of the building of the Beis HaMikdash was not a complete Nevuah. It wasn't a Nevuah Gemurah. It was on a lower level. It was a Nevuah on a lower level, right? It was more like in a dream, you know, or some kind of appearance.
What did he see in that, the first time? What did
The first time was when he just became king. Yeah, remember, but that's when he asked him what he wants.
I mean, what did Hashem tell him at that time?
He asked him what he wants. Do you want wisdom? Or do you want, that one, yeah?
Okay.
That was the first time. Okay, so that's what it says over here. This was the second time. I heard your tefillah, right? Went through the whole tefillah. Hashem says, hey, now I heard it. I agree to answer your tefillah. So you asked that the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, should not leave the Beis HaMikdash forever. So Hashem says, yes, I agree to that. My eyes, my heart is always constantly going to be there. Right? So now, he was referring to two things in the tefillah. First thing is that he asked, what did he ask for? The first thing he asked for was that the Shekhinah should always dwell in the Beis HaMikdash, no matter what. Even after it was destroyed, the Shekhinah should always be there. That's the first thing he's asking for. The second thing he asked for was that the Malchus, the kingship of the household of David, should continue for all the generations. So now Hashem is telling him, he's referring to those two points. He says, your first request was that the Shekhinah, my divine presence, should always dwell in the Beis HaMikdash. That I will grant you. I will answer it. Right? That's what he's saying. L'sum Shmisham. My name will always be there in the Beis HaMikdash, even after it's destroyed. Chas v'shalom. Right? And Hashem will have his special Hashgacha over the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why it's referring to his eyes, right? V'yu'enai v'libisha, my eyes and my heart are going to be in the place of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Eyes are referring to that special Hashgacha. And the heart is referring to the special love. Right? And it's referring to the two different times. Right? So it says, during the time that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built, then Einai V'Libi, my heart, my eyes and my heart are going to be there. But even after it's going to be destroyed, it says, still, Yikare Shem Hashem Olav. Right? Hashem's name will always be there. Even after it was destroyed. Hashem's name will always dwell on that. Meaning, it's not going to be the same level that it was when the Beis HaMikdash existed. It's going to be on a lower level, but still, Hashem's presence is always going to be there. I'm going to continue the kingship of the household of David, meaning you, Shlomo, and your descendants. As I promised your father, Kasher Dibarti El David Avi Chalemar Leikaret Lecha Ish Me'al Kisei Yisrael. Yeah. Right, so now the second request, notice that he says, Ad Olam. And at the end of the Pasuk Gimel, he says, Vasum Shmi Sham Ad Olam, Vayu Eine V'Libi Sham Kol Hayomim. So, there's two different measures of time. Ad Olam means forever, right? Kol Hayomim means all the days. All the days is referring to a specific timeline, all the days that something, right? So all the days is referring to the higher Ashgach of Hashem, the more intimate of Hashem's Ashgach in our lives. That's going to be only during the time the Beis HaMikdash exists. And then Ad Olam, forever and ever, is referring to the lower level of Ashgach of Hashem in this world, on the Beis HaMikdash, and that's going to be forever. Yeah? But my name will always be there. Now, regarding the second request of Shlomo HaMelech, that the Malchus of Beis David will continue forever and ever, that he says, that depends, right? I'm not giving you, I'm not granting your request across the board, that no matter what happens, the Malchus of Beis David will continue. That depends. Depends, right? Im teilech lefanai, if you follow my ways, right, betom lev, as the pasuk says, right, with righteousness of heart, and you follow my rules, then I will go ahead and I'll continue the Malchus Beis David. Right, and then he continues in pasuk A, Vakimaisi est kisam malchacha l'Israel lo'ilam kasher dibarati al davar devi chalem al leikar sechayish malkisa Israel. Right, I will continue my, I will keep my word. That just like I told David HaMelech, was kasher dibarati al David Avicha, like I told your father David. What did I tell your father David? I told your father David that it will depend. It will depend if your descendants will walk in the path of Hashem, will listen to me. Then okay, then I'll grant your request and I'll go ahead and I'll give them the ability to build the Beis HaMikdash. However, the Malchus will continue. But if you do not follow my rule, then Chas V'Shalom, I will not continue the Malchus of Beis David.
Why did he have to tell him that? I mean, that's known.
Well, Shlomo HaMelech asked for even more.
I know.
Shlomo HaMelech asked that even if they do not follow the ways of Hashem, he will still go ahead and grant and continue the Malchus of Beis David. And Hashem is saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you that request. It depends. If you follow my ways, then yes. But if not, no.
If you're a good boy, you're going to get a lollipop. If you're not a good boy, you're not going to get the lollipop.
The idea is, how could you think that Shlomo, that he meant that? That he meant, even though they'll sin, how could he ask him like this? It seems he's asking him something that can't be done. How can Solomon say, "Will you still do it if they don't do this?" That God has to tell them that if they do it, yes, and then if they don't do it, no. I mean, how can he ask such a thing?
Well, we see that Hashem did grant the first request, that even after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, Hashem will still leave a Shekhinah over there.
That's fine, but he's...
How do you explain that? How could Hashem leave the Shekhinah if they didn't, the Jewish people didn't follow Hashem's way?
That has to do with Hashem's presence, not the punishment that he's giving to the Jews that are not... It seems he's asking him not to give him any punishment, even if they'd sin. I mean, when he's telling them, then he's telling them, if they do a good thing, fine. If not, it's not fine. Yeah, I mean, that seems to me, that's the way it should be. How could he even think that? That they could get away with being bad.
Well,
he should leave it the same. It can't be a means of that. It has to mean
something. Well, look,
else.
Hashem promised David HaMelech, right? He promised him that the Malchus will go to his son, regardless.
Yeah.
Regardless of if his son will follow the ways of Hashem or not. Right? How could Hashem promise that to David? How could he promise that? What do you mean? If you do Hashem's will, then good. If not, then no. How could Hashem say, no matter what, that's no condition. Right? I'll give the Malchus to your son, David.
Yeah,
your son will be king next.
You'll give it to him, fine.
Even if he does the wrong thing. Even if he does not follow the rules of Hashem. Right? How do you understand that?
He was a young kid. When he became king, he had no time to do bad things.
Well, I'm asking, how did Hashem, before he was even born, before Hashem was born, Hashem promised David, your son will be king regardless, no matter what, if he does the right thing or the wrong thing.
He's got to be a good king. He didn't tell him for how long.
Okay, but he's saying
your son's going to be king. He hasn't done anything bad yet. He's a young kid.
Well, you could do bad things.
How can you think that if it means that even if he does the wrong thing, he'll continue being the king?
That's what he promised him.
I can't see that he means that.
But we see that's what Hashem promised David.
Huh?
That's what Hashem promised David, even if he does the wrong thing.
Yeah, he'll become king. He'd tell him he's going to stay king even if he does the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's what Hashem promised David HaMelech.
But he never did anything wrong.
Hashem promised David even before his son was born, right?
He promised him that his son will be king. They were fighting who's going to be the king. Absalom and the other was everything else.
Yeah.
Then he played, no, he's going to be the king. Yes, that's the way it is. And right now he's saying to Solomon, it's the same thing. Solomon's asking him, you do this, do this, do that, even if they don't deserve it. He says, no, that can't be. For him to be king himself, fine. That I can understand, he said there. He promised him because everybody else is trying to be. They're fighting and everything else. Like, so he says, okay. And then he tells him, you know what I told your father? That's going to be if you follow what I want you to do. He's telling him that now. What I told your father, you'll be a king only if this. He couldn't have meant when he told him that he'll be king even though he's bad.
Shlomo Melech went off the derech too.
Huh?
Shlomo Melech went off the derech too.
No kidding.
So
the things that were split.
We see that even when he went off the derech, what happened?
Going down, I'm going back here, the first promise that he says, the first promise.
That's a good point. Even when Shlomo went off the derech, Hashem still kept the Malchus in the hands of Shlomo. Even when he did sin. How could he do that? Because he promised David HaMelech that your son will be king. He's going to live out his kingship throughout his whole life. Even after he sins.
It depends what kind of a sin.
It was a pretty serious sin.
Did he bought it to statues?
It was idol worship. It wasn't him personally, but But his wives brought idol worship into his house.
His friends, fine.
Okay.
He's held responsible for that. His sins weren't as bad as the other ones.
He's held responsible for that.
What finally broke the camel's back? Hashem let them go, and they were sinning, and they, and all kinds of things and everything else that he's doing. Until when? until when? When did he finally said, no, you can't continue this way?
It was only Yeravam, the son, the grandson of David HaMelech. That's when the sins actually caused the Malchus to leave based on it. Until then, they still, even though Shlomo HaMelech sinned, the Malchus still continued. Regardless. Because Hashem promised to do it.
What sin is, what's the measure of a sin?
The worst thing they
is it me taking this and carrying this out in the street on Shabbos? Is that a terrible sin, or is it me doing something else?
Okay, we have to stop here. It's time for mincha.